This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, it's time. You know what time it is. It's playoff time. This is Place to Be Nation's NBA Team Podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich, and I am not joined by my regular co-host, Adam Murray, for this occasion. You will see him again this week, but I do have a very special guest that I do want to introduce that's going to be doing it with me. I'm going to get to him in a second. I think y'all are going to be pleasantly surprised. He's a very fresh voice. He's not scared to go for the jugular. But first, this was one of the wildest last stretches of a regular season I have ever seen. I've pretty much watched every regular season of NBA basketball since the beginning of the 1990s. And I do not recall any downward stretch in a regular season which so many playoff positions got flip-flopped from all the spots from 3 to 6 in the Western Conference to the last spot in the Eastern Conference and the West. Obviously, the teams in the West that were at the bottom, the New Orleans Pelicans and the Oklahoma City Thunder, had better records overall than the ones in the East that were fighting it out, eventually won in that last spot by the Brooklyn Nets because of the Indiana Pacers losing to the Grizzlies. But absolutely wild. We're going to get into it a little bit as we talk about the seedings, and you'll figure out which ones won and which ones lost and which ones suffered because of they didn't finish strong. But man, it just absolutely wild stuff with the NBA. I can only hope that the first round of the NBA playoffs can match what we saw in the most recent 7 to 10 days. But we're going to go ahead and get started, but for this one, we're going to be talking about the Western Conference, where there's a little perception there that that's where all the power lies, where the winner of the West is sort of the battle-tested champion who will eventually win the NBA championship. It worked out for the San Antonio Spurs last year. Will it be the Spurs again? Well, I'm going to bring in my one of my compadres, one of my bros, a Louisiana guy to help me out here because we need some southern flavor on these Place to Be Nation podcasts. There's just not enough of them unless they're all from Atlanta and they all have crazy country accents. This one does not have a country accent. I don't know what kind of accent it is, but his name is Norman Rockwell. How you doing, Norm?
Doing well.
What kind of accent do you have?
I have a normal accent.
Yeah, but you grew up in the swamps with me.
Yes.
So when you go around, like, and you're out of town, do they expect you to sound like a Louisian? Like, what do they expect a Louisianian to sound like?
I get Northeast all the time, even in the South.
But when they do an impersonation of a Louisianian person in a different area like the Northeast, what do they try to do?
It is either whatever you see on like USA, USA's Big Easy or NCIS or whatever voodoo kind of weird Louisiana Bourbon Street stereotype.
Oh, with the crawfish?
Pretty much, yeah, Nolans and things like that. Or it's just generic Southern accent.
Me and Norman.
Generic toothless Alabama fan accent.
Norm and I both grew up in the same part of town, south of the Ninth Ward, in New Orleans, I guess you could call it a suburb. It was a suburb in the 1950s. I don't know what the hell it is now, but
pond.
It's a pond. You could call it, you know, the swamps. You know,
cesspool.
The northern part they call it the sticks. You know, this is the swampland, and we always get this. People down here always get this assumption, like, well, they're all Cajun redneck people who fuck each other in their trailer in the backyard.
Well, that's generally true.
Well, it depends on what part of town you walk into.
No, but you can definitely think of back to high school and name a few people who that was fitting to.
Well, I went to an all-boys high school. I'm just going to leave that out there.
Okay.
okay, you want to talk about basketball?
No, we can keep going like this, actually.
Yeah, we could just start keep talking.
I'm sure the listeners are really interested in this.
And yeah, how Louisianians are perceived by the greater public. That's a very fascinating podcasting going on.
Anthony Davis.
That's a guy that I know. That's a guy that you know, too. His eyebrows are much, much nicer than mine. I'm still working on my unibrow. It's not.
He only has one, actually.
What's that?
His eyebrows are not nicer than yours.
Are you saying he has very nice eyebrows? I mean, you think a unibrow is like a nice eyebrow?
No, it's a singular one.
But do you think it's a nice brow? Like, do you like that kind of a furry brow?
I don't have particular taste, but I like Anthony Davis, so I like it.
So you also like the crazy like snaggle tooth that he has at the bottom of his teeth?
That's bizarre. He has way too much money to not address that.
I mean, like, have you ever seen Will Ferrell's bottom teeth? Like,
can't say that I recall it.
But what I'm saying is that celebrities, I mean, you should have enough money. Like Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan's got pearly whites. You know those are fake.
I do like how you're such a wrestling fan that when talking about celebrities, Hulk Hogan is the first guy that pops in your head.
Well, he's the most famous wrestler, so that's why he popped into my head first. But no, I was watching him on an interview. That dude has got pearly whites. You know those are not his real teeth. They can't be. And if they are, then he got major, major work done. I mean, how can these famous people not get their work done on their teeth?
Too busy leading teams to the playoffs, I guess.
I mean, look at Danny Granger. I mean, he busted his front teeth. Like, you know, you remember how – I think what it was 08 when Granger just fell to the floor, he busted his teeth. Well, I mean, he's got these dentures in. Nobody knows they're even there anymore.
No, he's a hockey player.
Well, Danny Granger might want to play hockey because he can't play basketball anymore. So we're going to be talking about the Western Conference playoffs. First of all, we want to do a little in memoriam. We're not going to do it for all the Western Conference teams. I would love to talk about the Minnesota Timberwolves for another 20 minutes, but unfortunately we're going to be running out of time for that one. I do want to talk about the two teams that came about as close to the playoffs as you could before petering out. One of them didn't peter out. They were there all the way to the end. The other one that we're going to talk about did, and that was the Phoenix Suns. You're not on the show. This is obviously your first appearance on the show, so you're not here to – you haven't talked about your opinion of the Suns as much as Adam. What was your opinion of the Phoenix Suns?
I don't know what the Suns were doing. They kind of decided after the All-Star break to kind of pack it in and with trading off Thomas and Bledsoe.
Is that one of the worst draft day moves of all time?
Well, it wasn't draft day, but I don't
– I mean trade deadline deals.
I mean, I guess they assumed they were going to lose Dragic in free agency, but I'm not sure why they shipped out both he and Thomas and paid the Lakers first round pick, which seems pretty crazy to me. Mm-hmm. I think Philly got the better of that trade. I'm not as high on Brandon Knight as the
and he got hurt in doing so.
Yeah, I'm not as high on Knight as the Phoenix Suns staff is, and he's a free agent as well. So I'm thinking you could have tried to sign him outright, but yeah, we'll see how it goes. I'm questioning it, but I really like Hornacek and the staff there. I think they get a lot of the players, so maybe I'm wrong.
Okay, and the other one that was there to the end was the Oklahoma City Thunder. They've been talked about ad nauseum for all kinds of different reasons. Kevin Durant's injuries, all the looming questions about him and free agency going into the following season once 2015-16 is over. Russell Westbrook going absolutely bonkers when he became the alpha male after Durant went down, Ibaka's injury, the Enes Kanter trade, all these kinds of different things that they did to try to make everything work. Unfortunately for them, it didn't because the Pelicans made a surge at the same time that the Thunder started dropping games in the last 2 weeks. Try to describe the Oklahoma City Thunder in general.
Russell Westbrook is awesome.
But that's all there is to it.
That's all there is to that team right now without Durant. Westbrook actually is my pick for the MVP of the league just because the carry job he did on that team was incredible. I was discussing with someone basically if he didn't pull the ball off the rim, race down the floor and jack up a shot before the defense was set, like that team just could not score or do anything. He did everything for them. And it's really a shame they missed the playoffs.
Well, do you think it would have been better off for them if they had been the team in the last spot playing against the top seed that we're going to be talking about in a second?
No, I think the Pelicans will stand a better chance, but for Russell Westbrook to watch a guy just have that much energy and exert that much effort and try so hard, personally, I feel bad to not have seen him in the playoffs, but team-wise, I don't think that they would be as competitive as the Pelicans would be.
Yes or no question. Does Scottie Brooks keep his job in the summer?
No, that's kind of the silver lining for this. Is I think Brooks has been a poor coach for his entire tenure there, and I think next year, if they get a healthy Durant, a better coaching staff, Westbrook and company, that had healthy Ibaka, that team could be substantially better.
Let me give a precursor about Norman Rockwell. Norman likes no coaches. If you ask him straight to his face, he will tell you that Greg Popovich is a bad coach.
I said he's not infallible. He does make mistakes.
But you're not a fan of coach. You think most coaches make a multitude of mistakes. College and pro.
Actually, that's changing a lot. Like, you're seeing a lot. There's been a lot of better coaches coming into the NBA in the past 2 years. Like,
But you grade on a harsher curve on coaches.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I'm pretty critical of coaches. A lot of coaches. Although the ones lately in the NBA have been – the new hires have been fantastic, I think, outside of maybe Lionel Hollins in Brooklyn and Byron Scott for the Lakers, which may be a tank job. I think all the new hires have been really, really good.
And Scottie Brooks is not one of those coaches.
Scottie Brooks is one of the longer tenured coaches in the league, and I'm not a big fan of Scottie Brooks.
You're not alone. Because Adrian Wojnarowski is reporting that his job might be at stake depending on how they evaluate him now that they're gone fishing.
That's kind of one of the sidelines with the stories with the Pelicans versus Thunder race for the playoff seeds is both coaches probably should be fired, and whoever's not going to get destroyed by the Warriors will get the benefit of having their coach having a – probably a better coach. So
the Dell Demps Monty Williams mandate was something that we locally had known about pretty much for a year. It wasn't as widely publicized. He was criticized heavily on Twitter by guys like Bill Simmons and such all the time. Now Bill's not always right, breaking news. But I think there was definitely a consensus out there that if they didn't make the playoffs, Monty Williams was likely going to be fired.
That was kind of the storyline going into last season where Tom Benson bought the team, and I guess him and their staff were more accustomed to football. Were turning
I guess
around
you could call them staff.
Mickey Loomis, the people in charge of the team, were of the opinion that with Anthony Davis, this should be a playoff team. And basically, everyone was kind of put on notice that we rebranded the team. We're trying to resell this team to the city that we need to make the playoffs, and
we need to put our footprint on it, not what the Hornets
pretty much, were. Pretty much. And due to so many injuries, that was kind of the excuse. And then going into this season, it's like, okay, well, you had last year. There were a ton of guys got hurt. We're gonna do this. We're doing the same thing again. Playoffs, or bust.
If Monty Williams, let me rephrase it. If the Pelicans lose that last game to the Spurs and they don't get in the playoffs, does Monty Williams have a job?
No. No.
It was that hard line.
That game was one of the biggest basketball games in New Orleans in 7 years, and that had so many locally eyes on that game that if they failed in that situation, I don't think Williams would have survived.
It had a little bit of karma, too, because one of our biggest games ever leading into this was in 08. When the New Orleans then Hornets played the Spurs in the seventh game of a Western Conference semifinals series, and they lost.
Yeah, another game in New Orleans.
Yes. So for them to be able to beat San Antonio, a team that was playing hot, that had something to play for, to get that final playoff spot. The other thing that is forgotten, and we're going to allude to it as we get to the next topic, is that they actually beat the Golden State Warriors to get to the spot that they were in the first place, something that no one thought they could do.
Yeah, they beat them, I believe, last Tuesday, which would be about 10 days ago from this recording.
Even though the Curry was on fire, they still couldn't beat them.
No, that was a phenomenal game. And, yes, they did win. This was the day, I think the day or the game after the Spurs eviscerated the Warriors.
Yeah, when Kawhi Leonard pickpocketed Curry, like, what, four times?
Yeah, so in fairness to the Warriors, though, they didn't really – I mean, they were resting some of their players. Like, Klay Thompson sat for most of the second half. Like, mm-hmm. They didn't quite give their best shot, but
– it's weird with Steve Kerr, you know, because the head coach of the Golden State Warriors in his first year. Because I was watching the Kings game. He played them almost the entire game.
He's playing Curry a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, he's Curry's got an MVP to win. So he tends to kind of play not rest Curry as much or kind of give Curry a few extra minutes. But some of the other guys, he is strategically resting. Like Bogut's a guy who, you know, and smartly because he's an off injured big and they haven't been playing him many minutes and they've been kind of scaling him back as of late.
Well, no more scaling back anymore because now we're in the nitty gritty. Some people wouldn't even call this the nitty gritty. A lot of people in the big picture, look at the first round as kind of a joke. I would like to tell anybody I would love to say that to any San Antonio Spurs fan who had to go 7 games with the Dallas Mavericks before winning an NBA championship, but that's just me.
Or getting bounced by Memphis a few years ago.
They were like a 60-win team and they lost to the 8-seeded Memphis Grizzlies.
No, I mean, the first round's a formality in the Eastern Conference. The Western Conference is just a bloodbath.
Yeah, it's absolutely wild. There's a couple of really great matchups. It's almost like a murderer's row. It's like you can't – it's like just having –
Yeah, this was the popular discussion was with the Pelicans and the Thunder was switching to a top 16 teams mm-hmm. versus the East and West bracket, and that's
you like that?
I love it, and the reason why most people give is that the Pelicans, Suns, and Thunder all had better records than the bottom.
But
three
then you'd
teams.
Get an NCAA tournament vibe where the San Antonio Spurs would play like the Milwaukee Bucks and absolutely destroy them.
And I don't have a problem with that. The thing I really like about going to the top 16 teams is the elite of the Eastern Conference won't get buys. Like if you looking at the East, Atlanta and Cleveland are kind of cakewalking.
We're not going to talk about the East, but Atlanta is getting like the biggest cakewalk I've ever seen with their first round matchup.
Cleveland's the number two seed in the East. They've got the, I believe, eighth best record in the league. So if you had just the top 16 teams, they would be on the fringe of not having home court advantage.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like basically the top teams in the East can kind of start resting guys. If it was a top 16, I mean, you saw kind of the.
You would lose the conference exclusivity. You would kind of lose the identity, too, because the West is a lot different from the East.
It's better. I mean, it would be – I think if you did a top 16, Cleveland at 8 would take on Dallas in the first round. And then if they advanced, they would take on the number one seed in Golden State. And then I guess if they won that series, they'd probably play the 4, which would be Atlanta, I believe.
No way. I'm looking at it. It would probably – wouldn't Cleveland be the next one? Or is that
– Well, Cleveland would be 8. They would play Dallas. The 8-9 match would be Dallas versus Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Then they'd play number 1, which would be Golden State. Then they would play, I guess, the 4-5, which would be – I'm thinking that 4 was going to be Houston.
This is all great in Norman Rockwell's mind. Unfortunately, we're not going to play this. We're not going to be playing this format, unfortunately.
I'm sorry. Just the idea of seeing LeBron James go against Dirk, Curry, Harden, and then...
God, you have such a thing for Dirk.
Well, I mean, Dirk's kind of running on fumes right now, but at least it'd be a rematch, and it's way more competitive than them versus Boston.
I'm going to make you hold that thought on Dirk because we're going to be getting to him soon. But first, I want to go in the order of the schedule for the Western Conference. The first game that's going to be up is going to be Saturday, 3:30 Eastern time on ABC. And we already talked a little bit, got off the top of it, but we're going to delve in a little bit more into the New Orleans Pelicans, the 8th seed, just got in thanks to a, like you were saying, a magnificent game between the Pelicans and the Spurs. Anthony Davis, 31 points, 13 rebounds, absolutely beasted in the fourth quarter. They're going to play the top-seeded, seemingly unbeatable Golden State Warriors at Oracle Arena to start off the series. Just give me an idea of how good the Golden State Warriors are.
They were 50 games over 500.
Is that if good?
That's historically good. They are an extremely good team. They're very, very, very good basketball team. And
okay, what makes them so good? Here's the part that I don't think people delve into too much, because you look at more than – you're more of a synergy guy probably than Adam is, probably even more than I am. What makes the Golden State Warriors so good? Is it the shooting? Is it the block shots? Is it the possessions?
They're the number one offense and the number one defense per possession, and they play at the fastest pace, so you get more possessions.
Let me ask you this, though. Is that defensive efficiency stat more of a mirage because it values steals and blocks, along with the fact that they play a higher number of possessions, which gives them a higher margin of error to make mistakes?
No, actually, it's really rare, because general consensus among most people around in the NBA is that playing faster helps the opposing team's offense and hurts your defense, and playing smaller, which they do a lot with Draymond Green at the four, hurts your defense. They've kind of spit in the face of both of those statements by having a small team and a fast team, and being the number one defense in the league.
Steph Curry is my MVP. I talked about it in the previous episode with Adam. He's still on the James Harden bandwagon. I still love Curry. I know it's a close race. I'm not gonna be an idiot like the owner of the Golden State Warriors and quote myself and say it's not even close, because it is close. But I just can't believe how well Curry has played. I think he's more of one of those transcendent players where it's almost like he surpasses his own stature as a guard, you know, from being like a good shooter to basically an unguardable player, you know, kind of like Jamie Foxx says in the commercial where he calls the league's most unguardable player, because it's true.
Well, it's not so much that he's unguardable. He's just such a threat at all times without the ball.
Maybe I'm just a big Jamie Foxx fan.
That may be it. No, I mean, I'm pretty sure that Curry's going to win the MVP. He's such a fun player to watch. Going to games, there's very few players that opposing teams' fans cheer.
Would you go to the playoffs game in New Orleans Arena in the Smoothie King Center, the blender if you will, and you would watch it just to watch Curry?
Oh, absolutely. I'm pretty sure, like...
Would you cheer?
Depends.
I see people high-fiving when Steph Curry crosses over.
So I went to the game about 2 weeks ago at the Pelicans 1, uh-huh. And sold-out game. The crowd's very much into it. Steph Curry goes behind his back twice, crosses over Quincy Pondexter, and pulls up and hits a three, and the place goes nuts for Curry, the road team, just because it was such an incredible play. And then everyone goes back to booing the Warriors.
So you saw this team in the flesh.
Yeah, I mean, basically, Curry is so popular and such an amazing player to watch, and it's people can want the Warriors to lose, but not many people dislike or don't want to see Steph Curry play.
Well, let me say this: the numbers always tell you something, and then watching them tells you another thing. When you watch the Warriors, even in a loss in that game, did they speak to you in the same way that the numbers did, that this team is unbelievably good?
Not so much in that game, because I think they were resting guys and they weren't really trying as hard as they could. I mean, you see glimpses of it. Like, you watch just how much shooting they put on the floor and how guys are just scared to help. Like, you can't leave Steph Curry at all. You You can't leave Klay Thompson. Draymond Green puts a lot of pressure on guys just because he can handle the ball well and kind of he can kind of run the break and be a point forward.
They're constantly getting offensive rebounds.
Yeah, I mean, and the other thing when you and you got such a quick team that quick and tall team that when they shoot a lot of threes and there's long rebounds, they tend to come up with get the ball off of scrambles. And then Bogut's a monster on defense. So, I mean, I love this team.
So you look at the standings, and, you know, I'm going to do this for pretty much every matchup as we go through the playoffs. You look at the Pelicans. I mean, we talked about how highly ranked the Warriors are in most of the statistics. Points, you know, they're first, Pelicans 16th. Field goal percentage, Warriors first, Pelicans 12th. Three-pointers made, no. Pelicans have a high percentage from the three-point line, but they don't take a lot of them. Free throws is actually the one place where New Orleans has a little bit of an advantage. The New Orleans has one of the worst benches. Warriors have one of the best. Rebounding, Pelicans are middle of the pack. Warriors are one of the best. Steals, we're terrible. I talk about the Pelicans. Steals, Pelicans are not great. Warriors really good. Warriors are also really good at blocks, but that's where the Pelicans are first, thanks to Anthony Davis and Omer Asik. The one place where they might have a problem, and when I say they, I mean the Golden State Warriors, they're 21st in the league in turnovers. Mm-hmm. The Pelicans are 7th, which means they're very careful with the ball, and if they're able to prevent turning the ball over, they might be able to control tempo of the game. Is that the only way that the Pelicans can steal any win out of Golden State?
Even that's a bit misleading because Golden State plays so fast. Like, they have way more opportunity.
Like I said, higher margin for error if you play a faster pace.
Yeah, so even that's a little misleading. I mean, the Pelicans' best chance is Anthony Davis just shows how incredibly dominant he can be when he's dialed in. And they steal – I think they may be able to steal a game, like game three in New Orleans.
Is Anthony Davis good enough to win a game all by himself, even against an elite team?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, Anthony Davis is – if he's not the top player in the league, he's definitely top three. And I think this is going to be a coming out party, and people are going to realize how incredibly good this player is.
When it comes to 8 seeds and 7 seeds, we spend so much time poking holes at him, especially you and I, because we've had to suffer sometimes through the Pelicans squad. But I want you to put your optimism cap on, your smiley face on. Tell me what the Pelicans do well, why they're in the position they're in.
Well, the one thing they do well in this series is actually defend the three-point line really well. And that's a prerequisite to giving Golden State any kind of trouble. If you can't defend the three-point line well, you're going to get just bombed out of the gym. And not many teams have a matchup for Davis. And
you think Draymond Green can even give him like an iota of trouble?
Oh, I think Davis. He can. I think Green's probably going to win Defensive Player of the Year. He's a really good defender, but Davis's length, speed is going to end playing in an up and down open floor game kind of really suits Davis. So I think Davis is going to be incredible this series, but I don't think that it's going to be enough.
Do you think this is going to be – I hate to say this because he's already been in the playoffs twice. Some great performances against teams like the Nuggets, also with the Clippers last year in a really entertaining series. But do you feel like this is kind of going to be the arrival for Thompson and Curry after a great regular season?
I mean, I'd argue that Curry's pretty much already arrived. I mean, 2 years ago, he gave the Spurs absolute fits when they went on to the finals. Mm-hmm. No, Curry's probably going to win MVP, so, I mean, I'd definitely say he's arrived. Klay Thompson was starting to get a lot more credit on the league as being a dominant player, great defender, and great shooter. So, I mean, I think people know who Golden State is at this point.
I think the X factor here, and I don't think a lot of people are talking about it as much, is the coaching. And the reason why I say that is because even though Steve Kerr has had more success as a first-year coach than any coach in the history of the NBA – with the 67-15 record, he's still the only coach who has never coached in the playoffs in the Western Conference, along with Monty Williams, who before has coached the then New Orleans Hornets to the playoffs in 2011, back when Chris Paul was still wearing a New Orleans uniform. So You and I are not fond of Monty Williams. We're not even going to hide it. Monty Williams.
No, we're basketball fans.
Yeah. He's a below average coach with a defensive mindset on a team that doesn't play great defense. So that kind of speaks to where your philosophy is and how bad you are at executing it. But he is the more experienced playoff coach. Do you think there might be a situation there where things get tight, they might drop a game, and people start questioning Steve Kerr's experience or lack thereof?
I mean, I think writers are going to invent stories to justify.
Writers invent stories.
I mean, excuse me. I mean, are writers going to say Kerr's inexperience cost them a game? Absolutely, they're going to say that if they drop a game. Is it true? Probably not. I mean, the Warriors have probably the best staff of assistant coaches in the league, and Kerr's and
Alvin Gentry and Ron Adams.
Yeah, I mean, Kerr's done a phenomenal job in deferring to those guys when they have good ideas or they know better, and I think that'll just continue.
My theory still with Gentry is when people ask what's missing with the Clippers, I always tell them it's Alvin Gentry. He made the offense great in L.A., and since he went to Golden State, the offense in L.A. has just been good. We'll get back to that.
No, actually, the Clippers' offense has been really good.
Yeah, but
really,
they were
really
better
good
last year. They were.
Maybe. Well, no, not maybe. No.
You don't think so?
No, the offense this year has been – I mean, I think the Clippers are number two in the league in offense.
Yeah, they're behind the Warriors, but I think they were number one last year.
Either way, I mean, if they have fallen off, it's not by much.
Mm-hmm. I get your point there, but I do feel like it's just a little something missed. But then again, when we get to the playoffs, we're going to find out that they're going to get a much tougher opponent. Here we go with Dirk, and that we're going to be talking about the Dallas Mavericks, who are this is going to be the second game. It's going to be 9:30 Eastern time on ESPN. God, it's a late game. That's going to be the Dallas Mavericks. That's the seventh seed. They look like they were in pretty good shape in the middle of the year. Then they made a trade with Rajon Rondo that you and I can discuss in a second, whether backfired or not. One way or another, they're still in the playoffs. And they play the Southwest Division champions, Houston Rockets, who wound up with the 2 seed after a whole lot of craziness in the last game, in the last day of regular season play. So we have a divisional rivalry. A lot of people think it's kind of like a super sultry one because of all the issues with Chandler Parsons leaving the Rockets to sign with the Dallas Mavericks and on a offer sheet that the Rockets wouldn't match and such and such and such. What is the kind of like the storyline that you find the most attractive? I mean, some people would point at Parsons, but I got a feeling you have a different angle.
I'm really curious to see what Rick Carlisle dials up against Houston.
You know, like, Rick Carlisle always has like one really great idea in every playoff series he coaches.
Yeah, I mean, last year the Spurs looked absolutely unbeatable every series except against Dallas.
You know why? Defensively, they refused to switch.
Who's that?
Dallas.
Actually, I think I recall last year Dallas switched every screen on the perimeter, and it kind of.
Oh, you're right. I'm so sorry. Yeah, they switched everything, and they couldn't penetrate.
They forced the Spurs to play one on one basketball
and neutralized Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah, and that wrinkle really gave. I mean, they took the Spurs to 7 games, and I mean they got obliterated in game 7, but that team pushed the Spurs more than anyone else. The main thing I think he can do is I think they can just really take advantage of the fact that the Houston offense is James Harden or nothing. And I kind of expect them to really just try to run hard and ragged all game long and hope he fatigues by the fourth quarter.
That's the thing though with James Harden this year, he hasn't fatigued yet.
He hasn't, but if you look at him, he's top 4 minutes. He played a ton of basketball. He hasn't gotten much rest. And now with the injury they have to Patrick Beverley, he is the only ball handler. He is the primary ball handler when he's in the game. So I kind of think they'll start picking him up full court and really try to put the screws to Harden and basically do whatever they can to fatigue him. I think Rondo will start off guarding him, and he'll pick him up 90 feet.
This is an interesting series for the Rockets. Last year, the series they had with the Blazers, if you looked at all every single category between the Blazers and the Rockets last season, they were so close. And one was a 4 seed, one was a 5 seed. It went 6 games, and the Blazers were up 3-1 at one point, but that series was a lot closer than that. Almost every game save for one of them was very close.
That was such a phenomenal series. Like, that was just...
Ended with the Damian Lillard buzzer beater in Game 6. That could have easily gone back to Houston.
Yeah, I mean, every game was down to the wire. I mean, that was one of the best series to watch.
This one's a little different. I do feel like, even though there's not that much separation between the 2 seed and the 7 seed, in terms of wins and losses, only about 6 games, I do feel like the Rockets are definitely better than the Dallas Mavericks. And it's not just the statistics, because offensively, the Mavericks are probably about as good, if not better, than the Houston Rockets. The only one thing that the Rockets have beat on the Mavericks, they have beat on everybody in the league, it's three-pointers made. They set a record for number of three-pointers made in the league. The benches for both are pretty good. The rating on this one of these websites I read said the bench for the Dallas Mavericks is like the second best in the league. I'm not sure if that's like a real, like an
eligible. I'm not sure I'll buy that.
Yeah, you see, it was one of those kind of Bleacher Report ones, and I was like, the Dallas Mavericks are the second best bench.
If you actually save and if you use Google Chrome as your browser, save. Do yourself a favor, go into Google, remove Bleacher Report from every one of your searches.
Yeah, but the NBA is sponsored by Bleacher Report.
It doesn't matter. If you just remove Bleacher Report and never get any result from BleacherReport.com, your life will be so much happier. I highly recommend it. ESPN.com is going that way with this new format. I really can't stand it.
New ESPN.com is ass. It is absolute terrible. It is mobile unfriendly. Every time I turn on my Kindle and try to put on the new ESPN.com, my freaking Kindle wants to explode and have sparks come out of its side. I can't stand it.
Pretty much. We've had to stop this podcast and start re-recording because some window I had in the background decided to just play random video.
Whose idea was it to have every news item with its own play window? Every fucking one. Like, I don't care about how many freaking birdies Jordan Spieth hit in the fucking Masters. If I want to do that, I'll click on the golf section. You know?
Apparently, it works well for advertisers to just yell and scream ads at you.
Because they pop the ads in the moment you click on it.
Yeah, because it's in my third or fourth tab, which I can't find it, so I'm forced to listen to... How many birdies were scored in the Masters as if I care about golf?
I hate it. The one place where the Rockets definitely have an advantage, and like we were kind of alluding to with the Pelicans and the Warriors, is that the Rockets are 29th in turnovers. And I don't care what pace of play you play. That is bad, okay? And the Mavericks are fourth. So that's a bit of an advantage. After that, the numbers are pretty close together. The one key difference is that even though the Rockets turn the ball over a whole lot more than the Mavericks do, the Mavericks have one of the worst defenses in the league, bar none. They're by far the worst defense in the Western Conference playoffs right now. So my question is this. They bring in Rajon Rondo. Mm-hmm. His assist numbers were really good when he was playing his last month in Boston to start the season. And that's fine. He's always been an assist man. He's, you know, offensively, he was kind of underrated when he was in Boston. But his key was his defensive acumen. He was able to get steals, block shots with that size of his hands, be able to steal the ball. Why, with Rondo there, has Dallas not picked it up on the defensive end?
Because Rondo's not a good defender.
Explain.
Rondo got known for being a really good defender when he played with Kevin Garnett behind him in Boston. And that really he was kind of one of the focal guys for that team, and people didn't realize how good the guys behind him were. Rondo is pretty overrated as a defender, and I think you're seeing that come to life this season.
Rick Carlisle has this, like we were kind of talking about how we don't think he's like the smartest coach ever, but we do think he's he's one of the brighter bulbs in the lot.
Oh yeah, he's definitely one of the brighter coaches, especially in the playoffs when trying to make specific adjustments to specific opponents. That's
what I'm saying. He's also really good at mixing up eclectic casts and making it work. Why is the Rondo addition not working?
Because Rondo really doesn't fit in with that team. Rondo's a big negative when he doesn't have the ball, because you can just double team off of him and you can generally leave him open. And Dallas's best player in Dirk is a ball dominant player. So if you take the ball out of Dirk's hands, well, you make Dirk less effective. If you take the ball out of Rondo's hands, their teams can now double Dirk and you can help off of other players.
If we did like a caveman timeline with, you know how you talk, you know, the monkey evolution timeline with Dirk. Where are we at with Dirk Nowitzki right now as a basketball player? You don't have to do an ape. You could do a percentage or in his twilight or whatever you want to call it. Do you think he's at?
He's on his last legs.
Like how far in though? Like Kevin Garnett last legs right now or?
Yeah, not quite, but getting there. I mean, Dirk's he really can't run. He really can't defend. Terrence Jones should do extremely well in this series, or whoever's playing the four.
Well, because you think they can cheat and put Trevor Ariza on Nowitzki?
No, because Dirk can still hit that one-legged post fadeaway shot, and that's pretty much the extent of his value. Like his ability to be tall and shoot over guys is what's keeping him as a great player in the league.
You made a case though last year that you felt like the Dallas offense had too much sentimentality towards Dirk because he's Dirk, and that they were trying to revolve things around him when they really should have been doing it for Monte Ellis. And I agreed, because I felt like even though Monte Ellis isn't the best player with, like, in terms of career path, the best player, he was the most effective player for what they were doing, and they were not centralizing the offense around him. They kept going to Dirk, and it was kind of creating a black hole.
I don't recall which series or when I was mentioning that.
San Antonio.
Is it San Antonio?
Yeah.
Hmm.
You basically said they were going to Dirk down the stretch of games when they shouldn't have.
I mean, I think Dirk's one of the better players in crunch time in games, just because he's got an unguardable shot and he can always get it off.
But defensively, he's a liability.
I think in that series, I think I may have made the point, because they were switching everything, and you would get players. They were switching players on the Ellis that couldn't guard. No, actually, I'm confusing myself. I'm guessing. Dallas is the one switching every screen, so I'm not sure why I said that. And
I think I'm just lying and just making all this up.
Yeah, I'm legitimately confused. Thank you very much for that.
I just feel like Dirk is at a point in his career where they try to go to him a little too much, especially in transition. They always want to do that transition top of the key free, and I know it works, but then there's some, it's an old reliable, I guess. They still do it with Paul Pierce sometimes when he's in Washington last year in Brooklyn, but there's points where it's like, dude, you need to do something different. You know, they have Chandler Parsons. He's coming off of a knee injury. I'm pretty sure he's going to be paired up with Ariza most of the time. Patrick Beverley for the Houston Rockets, who we really haven't talked about that much yet, he's out for the season with a wrist injury. Donatas Motiejunas probably out as well. So the Houston Rockets, as they have all year long because of Dwight Howard's knee problems and because of a lot of other different, you know, mash unit incidents that they've had, they've been going without a full roster pretty much the entire season. That's why a lot of people have been giving credit to James Harden for the season that he's had. Do you think that all these problems that they've had with the injuries, including Dwight Howard coming back from his knee problems, is going to haunt them in this particular series?
Not so much in this series. I think they can comfortably beat Dallas. Going forward, I think losing Patrick Beverley is going to be a big issue with them in round two, regardless if they draw if they draw the Clippers or the Spurs, because Beverly guarding Chris Paul or Tony Parker would really help them versus whoever they're going to have to assign to guard those two players.
I mean, they would have to throw in Pablo Prigioni somehow, you know. And they, and also, those throw-ins that they got with Corey Brewer and Josh Smith, those have really helped them. The one problem is, and Greg Popovich sort of exposed this a few weeks ago in the regular season, Josh Smith is a terrible free-throw shooter. Terrible. And I don't know how this happened. I remember Josh Smith being a decent free-throw shooter in Atlanta. I just think he got fat and lazy.
Maybe so. I mean, Houston does have a lot of like, if you want to run a hack-a-blank strategy, you can just pick a Houston, any Houston big outside of Terrence Jones and run that.
Mm-hmm.
Between Smith, Dorsey is just atrocious.
Oh, my God.
I mean,
Terrence Jones isn't the best either.
I mean, by comparison, he's Steph Curry compared to Joey Dorsey.
That's going to be an interesting one. But like I said, they're a little bit close together in terms of their style of play, because they're both offensively predicated. The Dallas is a little too offensively predicated for my taste.
Actually, I think Houston wins this series just because Dallas has no one to guard James Harden. There's no one on that roster who can limit James Harden. And if you actually and the Rockets have a lot of, with Howard back, they've got a lot of length.
You don't think Rondo can give Harden problems?
No. No, I mean, I led by saying I don't think Rondo's nearly as good of a defender as he's given credit for. So, mm-hmm. No, I think James Harden will just eat him alive and live at the free throw line.
Have you been enjoying this Three Amigos trip with Amari Stoudemire, Charlie Villanueva, and Richard Jefferson? The 2005 All-Stars?
Pretty much. I think Mark Cuban has just lost his mind. And
hey, they said that in 2011. Like, why are you bringing in Sean Marion and Peja Stojakovic? You know they're washed up. Well, then they win an NBA championship.
Yeah, but that was also 4 years ago with Dirk, when Dirk was
unstoppable.
Unstoppable.
That was when he was actually good. So when Norm was confused, it's probably because we're trying to remember Dirk Nowitzki when he was actually good, and it was a really, really long time ago. I hate to kill Dirk like that, but I'm sorry, but it's true. I was a big time Dirk fan, and now I'm just really down on him. I'm really down on him. So, they played in 2005. That was when Tracy McGrady dunked on Sean Bradley when the Rockets went up 2-0 in the first two games in Dallas, and then Dallas won the next two in Houston and wound up, and they eventually won the series in 7 games. So, you know, it's interesting. I don't know if there's bad blood between Dallas and Houston, but I think it spills over.
The fans care.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure the fan bases are going to be all over this series.
That's why I love that Clippers-Warriors series last year, even though not all the games were great.
See, the difference is I think the Clippers and Warriors legitimately don't – the players don't like each other.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I don't think the players for Dallas and Houston dislike each other.
Like, disdain. Like between the war, I've been trying to tell Adam this, and he keeps telling me there's no rivalries, and I do think there are a few. I do. I think there are a few. Are some of them sort of manufactured? Yes. But I do think there are a few. And I feel like Warriors-Clippers, they just have this, like, hatred for one another.
People hate the Clippers. Like it kind of got masked last year because everyone was kind of fans of the Clipper players because of the Sterling issue.
Bob City.
Well, no, I was thinking because of Sterling.
Sterling. Being sentimental because of what happened with Sterling.
Well, we kind of felt so pathetic for the players dealing with the situation they did, but no, people. I mean, Blake Griffin came to the NBA. Everyone loved him. Year two, felt. People really turned on Griffin. A lot of players didn't like him because he was dunking on people and showboating. And Chris Paul and Griffin were two of the biggest floppers in the league. So, like,
that's
I could
true.
See a lot. I mean, a lot of people just did not like the Clippers. I mean,
you know what? So, I'm actually going to cheat on my own format, and we'll just go straight to that one. And that's the L.A. Clippers as the 3 seed, the second best team in the Pacific Division behind the Warriors, and they play. Unbelievably, the 6th-seeded defending champion San Antonio Spurs.
How mad are the Clippers at the Pelicans for beating San Antonio?
Well, how mad are they at the Spurs for losing?
I'm sorry. Yeah. Well,
I mean, you could take it that way if you want to.
Yeah, that's true too. But like, they just drew that draw is just horrible for the Clippers. Like, they got probably the number two team in the West.
But you make a point about the Clippers, because you know what I do notice is that, you know, they played the Grizzlies. They played the Grizzlies twice.
Who they also don't like.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. They played the Clippers twice, and the Clippers played the Grizzlies twice in the postseason, and there was definitely bad blood there. The Warriors, bad blood there. They played the Thunder once. They had a little bit of chippiness there at the end, and then there was then there's the Spurs. Now Chris Paul has played against the Spurs on two separate occasions. Once as a New Orleans Hornet, he lost in seven games. That was in 2008. That was eons ago. Then in 2012, right after the lockout, he had a knee injury anyway, I believe. They played in the second round, and the Spurs swept them. Now the Clippers have home court advantage. It's also the most decorated coaching duel in the playoffs, with Doc Rivers, who won an NBA championship, versus Greg Popovich, probably the greatest coach in the history ever. So what do you see here with the coaching? And if you see any strategizing, I guess you could say, between the two coaches with the Clippers and the Spurs.
Oh, I mean, I think Popovich is the better coach. I would give any strategic edge to the Spurs here regarding the coaching matchup.
Do you see two scenarios that have been talked about a lot? Number one, Pop will go back to hacking DeAndre Jordan late in games, mm-hmm. and they will put Kawhi Leonard on Chris Paul down the stretch to shut him down.
I'd agree with that. I mean, we mentioned earlier that the Clippers are one of the best offenses in the league. So if you can just start hacking Jordan and reduce their effectiveness on offense, I think that's very much a viable strategy, and I'd expect to see Popovich use that at times. And the other point you made about putting Kawhi Leonard on Chris Paul, I mean, I think the Spurs depend on Leonard too much for offense to permanently put him on Chris Paul, but there'll definitely be stretches where they'll run fresh bodies at Chris Paul, and Leonard's going to be one of those guys.
When you stare at the Spurs across the board, the mm-hmm. thing that makes them so dangerous is that they're not bad at anything. You know, are they great at everything? No. Like, their points per game, good. Their free throws made, good. Their turnovers, good. And I mean, when I say good, I mean like kind of like teetering right below the middle of the pack or right above the middle of the pack. Bench, really good. Defense, really good. Assists, really good. Not as good as last year when they led the league in assists and field goal percentage, but still very good. The Clippers do have a few holes. Number one, and everyone knows it, they have a horrible bench. Their bench players are garbage.
Oh, Doc Rivers, the coach, must hate Doc Rivers, the GM. He's
I mean, Kevin Eastman, his assistant.
Yeah, I mean when Doc took over, I mean he was given Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan. He's gone out and just surrounded those three with the worst cast that he can possibly find.
Including Austin Rivers.
Including his son, yes.
Did you see Blake Griffin's impersonation of Austin Rivers in that video?
It's pretty accurate. I mean, Austin Rivers couldn't make it playing for his godfather in Monty Williams, so he's playing for his dad now. He's really bad at basketball. NBA basketball.
Let me give you I don't know if Matt Barnes starts, but I bet he does. If he does, and Jordan Crawford's a sixth man, who's perennially a sixth man, your bench is Austin Rivers, Spencer Hawes, Nate Robinson, Jordan Farmar, Glenn Davis, Hidu Turkoglu, CJ Wilcox.
Yeah, Crawford is the only saving grace. Mm-hmm. And I'm not even a huge Crawford fan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's entertaining as all hell to watch and phenomenal, but he's not the most productive basketball player.
No, the Clippers do a lot of things right. They've got Chris Paul.
You could argue
the best point guard in the league still.
I'd agree with that.
It's close, though. They don't turn the ball over a lot. Great block shots because of DeAndre Jordan. Blake Griffin has slightly regressed scoring-wise compared to last season, but still a great scoring power forward. They get to the free throw line a lot. Their defense is not terrible. You know, so they do have and they are also one of the hottest teams going down the stretch. I think the only team that had a better record than them in the last 2 months was the Golden State Warriors in the West. So they're coming in pretty strong.
The Spurs weren't in there as well?
The Spurs were right behind them. I think the Spurs and the Clippers were tied in terms of record after some point in the date. I don't remember the statistic, but it was like after like late January or maybe like late February, best record. And I think the Spurs and the Clippers were tied for second, and the best one was Golden State. It was one of those kind of innocuous statistics. But basically, they're both coming in with a head of steam. And I think a lot of people are kind of taking for granted the fact that the Clippers have home court in the series.
Yeah, that was kind of the one. I like the Spurs to win this series, but I don't see it's going six or seven. It goes six or seven games. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm one of the biggest Chris Paul fans. I think he's absolutely incredible, and I really think with home court, he is going to at least take two games off of San Antonio.
What kind of a fart bomb would it set for some of the Spurs fans if they lose in the first round?
Those people have watched some of the best basketball for the past 15 years, so I don't care how spoiled those people are. They can suffer for all I care.
What is the possibility? Because this is giving me a little small reminder sometimes of the 2007 or the 2008 series where the Spurs played the Suns in the first round, and everybody was all thrilled and excited about it because they couldn't believe they were getting this great matchup. The first game went to double overtime. Shaq was in Phoenix, and the Spurs won the first three games, and the series was over. Do you see a similar situation possibly happening here?
Probably not, just because I really think home court and Chris Paul really is going to be too much for
– and drawing fouls.
Yes, and Steve Ballmer dancing to Fergie is going to be way too much for the Spurs to overcome and take both games.
That is very hard to overcome. Like, every time I find a vine of it, I start watching it over and over and over and over and over.
Yeah. Yeah, he's – that is a crazy man.
That collared shirt is just – that's a tight collared shirt.
It's definitely holding on to the
deal. Like, if you're overweight, wouldn't you wear kind of like one of those – like kind of like oversized collared shirts?
He's got I don't care money.
What is I don't care money? Define it.
He's got enough money where he
is that LeBron money or is that beyond LeBron money?
It's beyond LeBron money.
What is I don't care money? Define it.
Google any outfit that Floyd Mayweather wears like courtside of the game, and that's I don't care money.
Well, I would say the wrestlers, but they don't actually bring those home.
No.
You know how Ric Flair's like, I have all these robes in my closet. I'm like, oh, really? Well, show me your closet, because I don't see those robes.
Does he even have a closet? Like, aren't those guys just on the road all the time?
Well, Ric Flair, I've heard rumors is retired.
Did he move back into his biggest house on the biggest hill?
Oh, over on Space Mountain?
Yeah.
At the Holiday Inn in Orlando?
Yes.
Oh man, I hate making fun of Ric Flair, but
Ric Flair is the best.
He's styling and profiling. Yeah. A lot of people want this series to be great. It's almost to a point where people are sort of forcing it on the media side, where it's like, this is going to be the greatest series ever. And it's like, I don't know, you got to wait for it. You got to let it breathe. Do you kind of have the same like trepidation, like maybe this one's not going to be as good? Maybe there's certain because remember when the Thunder played the Spurs last season in the Western Conference Finals, people wanted it to be a great series. And if you remember, the first five games were trash. They were complete blowouts. Like, do you see something similar here where one style of play kind of overtakes the other?
No, I mean, I just love the Spurs team, and I love watching Chris Paul play, and I really think that this is going to be fun to watch.
The Spurs were a one seed last year, over 60 wins, won an NBA championship. Kawhi Leonard's awesome, you know. Duncan Ginobili and Parker are warlocks; they never age. Great bench, team play, motion offense, blah blah, all that jazz. they went all the way to a six seed. Is there a point where you kind of think to yourself, man, I need to be worried about this team? Like, do you feel like they are worse in any rate than they were last year?
I think some guys have gotten regressed a little, but the problem with the Spurs, evaluating the Spurs in the regular season, is they're so good, and they and Popovich knows that they can make the playoffs and do pretty well even without giving 100% effort, that they kind of like they'll treat the first half the season and just as his opportunity to just tinker with lineups and just see what he can do. I mean, you kind of saw it last year where they experimented going small. They changed their lineups a ton, and they started doing a lot of the same things this year. Like I know locally watching them play the Pelicans beat them in a game in December, and the Spurs played predominantly zone. Mm-hmm. They played zone defense for most of the game. And that's something really like they haven't gone back to, that they just kind of, well, let's see what happens if we do this. I get the feeling that Popovich and company, they just start trying different strategies so that, and get some experience running them so that if we ever have to use this, we can actually refer to it and we know what lineup's effective and who can do what.
I do feel go ahead, finish up.
Oh, no, I was going to say, so basically going off the regular season, it's difficult because they may run their actual offense 65-70% of the time. So, like, there's going to be a lot of, like, misleading things using the full season data for the Spurs.
They did improve defensively. I can't lie there. Defensively, they're probably about as good as they have been for the past 4 or 5 years. Because the thing that hurt them on when it came to the last few years, especially in 2013 when they lost in the finals of the Heat, is that defensively they were good, but they weren't, like, super strong. You know, they had some issues where they couldn't get stops at the right times. They've gotten better at it, you know, over the course of this season than they have in the past few seasons.
Well, the difference was they were always a kind of a conservative style defense, keep teams in front of you. They didn't really have a bunch of great – they didn't have many great one-on-one individual defenders that could really pressure ball handling.
Well, they have one now.
And now they do. Kawhi Leonard just becomes such a monster, like defending anyone on the ball.
Is he their best offensive player?
No, Parker's still their best offensive
player. But he leads the league. He leads the team in scoring.
He may, but Parker really is the engine that kind of gets the offense going.
With that stupid, like, loop play.
Pretty much.
Loop. Every time I see him, I'm like, the loop.
I mean, Parker just can get into the paint and get guys open shots nearly at will. But the problem this series is he's going against one of the best defensive point guards in Chris Paul, so that's going to be a very interesting matchup to watch.
You're an X's and O's guy, and in case I don't get a chance to get you back on, like, before the playoffs end, you know, everybody has, like, kind of, like, their go-to when it comes to defining what, like, the certain actions of a team. Like, for, you know, for the Bulls, we talk about the triangle all the time. With the Stockton Malone, we talk about the pick and roll. Is there one really with the Spurs that you kind of think about, like, with all their motion off it? Do you think of, like, the hammer play or the loop or, you know, the dribble handoff? Like, what do you think of when you think of this Spurs offense? It's what's made them so successful.
Misdirection. The Spurs are the one team, or one of the few teams, and Atlanta kind of does it somewhat, where they'll, like, most every team runs high pick and roll. The Spurs will run 3 or 4 dummy actions to kind of get people slightly out of position and then run the pick and roll. So if you watch the Spurs, a lot of times you'll see them start the ball on one side, swing it to the left side, run some cross screen, run
constant off-ball movement.
Constantly, and then they kind of get into the actual play. Mm-hmm. So they show so much false action.
Their effectiveness is so good late in the shot clock.
Pretty much, yeah.
Because they're prepared to run a play with little time left.
That, and they also cause a lot of fatigue on the opposing team because they don't know, because they're covering three or four ball screens. And I mean, it's defending 3 or 4 ball screens is really difficult for most teams. And the Spurs put pressure on you to defend several screens each possession.
We've been talking for years about the Spurs offense being so successful. What makes the Clippers offense so successful?
This year, the real big change for them was, when Blake Griffin got hurt, and they basically put Chris Paul in a high pick and roll and spread the floor with shooters. The offense really took off.
I think Redick is underrated as a shooter. I think he's a big part of what makes him
good. Oh, I mean, I don't think anyone underrates Redick as a shooter. I mean, he draws so much attention, and he draws a lot of attention on the perimeter.
I still think people forget about him. Like, even as a spot shooter, I think people forget.
No, he's so hated from his Duke days. I don't think anyone forgets how much
they don't want to give him credit because he's a Dukie.
I mean, that might be true, but he's not forgotten.
It's like Tyus Jones. What if Tyus Jones becomes, like, one of the best point guards in the league? People are still going to hate him because he went to Duke.
He was only there for 1 year. It's kind of easy to forget.
Well, Austin Rivers did, too.
Yeah, but, I mean, I think everyone just thinks of Austin Rivers as being the terrible son of a coach, not so much
son of a coach.
I don't think people think of Austin Rivers as a Dukie. I just think of Austin Rivers as guy who I wasted money watching play.
But the other thing too, Matt Barnes, not a bad 3-point shooter. DeAndre Jordan shoots 70%.
From a 3-point line?
Huh?
From a 3-point line?
He wishes. I think he's only taken one 3-point shot this year. And
yeah, that may be conservative.
But DeAndre Jordan, he was like the first player since I think like Will Chamberlain to shoot over 70%. Is that a misleading stat?
I mean, he probably did.
Oh, he really did. He shot 70%.
I mean, are you? He's not like a great shooter, but I mean, he can dunk the ball really well.
I mean, but that means you are a physically dominant player. Am I correct?
It means you take a lot of easy shots.
But you create those easy shots by causing a lot of space.
By being 7 foot tall and playing with Chris Paul and being able to jump really high.
Do you think the free throw shooting of Griffin and DeAndre are going to cost them in a series where you got to make free throws down the stretch?
I think so, because if they can hack Jordan and get him out of the game in certain stretches, the Clippers bench is atrocious, and that's really going to, like, they're going to have a real hard time defending if they put Spencer Hawes or Turkoglu out on the floor.
Do you think hacking at the end, like Popovich has, do you think that's more of a troll job, or do you think that's just good strategy?
Can it be both?
It could be both if you want to, but explain why for both.
It's a bit of a troll job just because it's kind of really frustrating to the opposing coach, the opposing fans. It's a great road tactic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, especially, you know, when the fans are really into it and then they have to keep constantly sitting down and watching the game getting stopped.
Can I explain how it can backfire, though? And I saw it in the Pelicans game.
Mm-hmm.
If you continuously foul, it allows the other team to contemplate their half-court offense. And if they are able to gather themselves, they can execute better.
That's one thing. I'm not sure about how good the strategy is because –
because you know what I'm saying, though. You can kind of think over your plays.
You're always facing a set half court defense.
Yes.
So you're not getting easy buckets. You're not getting easy transition stuff. You're playing against a set defense, and the opposing team can pretty much run their better defensive lineup against you because you know they know they don't have to worry about offense.
Okay. And we're going to hold off on that prediction along with the other two that we talked about. And we're going to finish up the last one here, and that is going to be a Sunday game, 8 o'clock Eastern time on TNT. The Spurs-Clippers game is actually last. They're obviously the West Coast game, so they're going to be last game out on Sunday. On Sunday also, before that game, will be the Portland Trail Blazers, who are the Northwest Division champions. Now, even though they were the divisional champions, they will be on the road as a 4 seed against the Memphis Grizzlies, who are the 5 seed. You love the Memphis Grizzlies.
I really like the Memphis Grizzlies, although I actually like Portland to win this series.
That's a surprise.
Yeah.
Because there's a little bit of attrition going on with the Blazers' litany of injuries. Obviously, Wesley Matthews tearing his Achilles was a terrible, terrible blow to them. That was their best wing defender and a great 3-point shooter.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Nicholas Batum had a bit of a knee problem. CJ McCollum with a problem with his foot all of a sudden. Aaron Aflalo would look to be a pretty bad shoulder injury. We don't know when he'll be back. It might be later in the series against
Memphis. Thinking game three.
Yeah, I think he'll be back after game two at the worst.
I'm thinking game three, they're going back to Portland, he'll probably play.
So you have all these injuries. You have LaMarcus Aldridge with the broken thumb. The Grizzlies are at full strength.
No, not really. I mean,
I know Conley's got the foot problem, and I know Tony Allen has the hamstring.
And Marcus Soles had an ankle.
I watched Marcus Hall play the Pacers, and he looked fine to me.
I think he is fine. I think Conley, if Conley's limited, that really hurts them.
But why do you like the Blazers?
I like the Blazers in this series because I think LaMarcus Aldridge really should be able to get to score pretty well against the Memphis' defense, and Memphis' defense is their calling card. And if Conley's hamstring is limiting him at all, then Damian Lillard should be able to do pretty well on offense, and they can score points.
The Blazers
and Portland's defense is really predicated on being conservative and like not attacking and kind of forcing teams into making contested jump shots, and Memphis just does not make shots well.
The Blazers are an incredibly balanced team. It's weird because in the Pacific Division, all those teams like to run. In the Southwest Division, there's a lot of teams that are they run a lot of the same type of offense as the Spurs do. In the Northwest, it's kind of weird. You know, you got the Jazz, who were kind of a defensive-minded team. There was the Denver Nuggets, who I don't know what the fuck they were. And the Timberwolves, who are a mad science experiment. And the Thunder, who are kind of an eclectic mix themselves. And they change a lot. They changed their style midseason because of Durant's injury. The Blazers are kind of the same way because they kind of fool you. Like you watch them and they seem like this like awesome 3-point shooting team, but their defense is in the top 10. You think they like to run and they don't want to slow it. They don't want to slow the game down, but they're second in the league in rebounding. You know, you wouldn't think that they're a great shooting team, but they are. You know, it just seems like every time you watch the Blazers and you think to yourself, well, that's the kind of team that I think they are, they kind of fool you.
They've had a lot of injuries this year. And like I said, losing Matthews really, really hurts them. So they've had to adjust a little bit as well. And Lillard had some pretty rough stretches where he was shooting really poorly, kind of coinciding with Aldridge's injury before the All-Star break.
They don't get to the free throw line a lot. That's their number one weakness. And it's weird because I think they were great at getting the free throw line last year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand really what happened there, but Lillard is about as good as he was. He's probably a little better this year than he was last year. LaMarcus Aldridge is about the same, which is a compliment because he was great last year and he's been great this year. Mm-hmm. The Memphis Grizzlies do not like to shoot threes. They are a decent rebounding team, not great. They don't block a lot of shots. But defensively, like you said, that's where they hang their hat. Offensively, I think the difference with the Grizzlies this year is that, you know, in 2013, 2012, and 2014, they were horrible on offense. I mean, god awful. Like, mm-hmm. bottom three, bottom five. This year, they're good. Like, they're solid. You know, mm-hmm. Do you think that could be enough for them to get past the Blazers?
I mean, I think they're going to be the favorite in this series. I mean, it's definitely going to help. But I do like Portland in this series. I think Portland should be able to get enough offense together against a good Memphis defense just because of the way they match up. But your point being that Memphis' offense is dramatically improved from how they were for the last 2 years.
My opinion of that is that I think they've given more offensive freedom to Marc Gasol, and that's really helped them because now it gives them two low post stores instead of one.
To me, the upgrade from Jeff Green from Tayshaun Prince has just been offensively is just massive.
Well, he's a great six man, and no one knew if he would kind of like go to that role,
mm-hmm.
but he really has.
Well, that and they added a lot of shooting. I mean, Courtney Lee, helps them space the floor a little bit, and Vince Carter has actually been giving them decent minutes off the bench.
Adam Murray said that. I said, what's your favorite like complimentary player? He said Vince Carter.
Well, Vince Carter's amazing to me. If you would have told me 10 years ago that this guy would basically lose practically all of his athleticism and become a great spot shooter off the bench, like, I would have never imagined that guy could have done that and accepted that role.
The Blazers bench last year was terrible. It was like just as bad as Indiana's, which had gotten maligned all season long. This year they got a little bit better thanks to mm-hmm. McCollum's ascension. I think Myers Leonard played a little better. Joel Freeland played a little bit better. They got a little bit more out of their bench than they did last year, which is, you know, not that much of a compliment because they got nothing last year.
Kamen's scoring punch helped them out a lot as well. I mean, considering how awful their bench was last year.
Now, the Grizzlies still have him beat on the bench. You know, you got Nick Kalaitis. Oh, yeah. They brought in Jarnell Stokes, who's really done a decent job when they need to give some blow to Zach Randolph, which he does because he's a little older. He can't play all 48 minutes anymore. Costa Kufos, solid. John Luer, solid. Vince Carter, good player. You can take Tony Allen, Jeff Green, and switch him off the bench if you want to, and you get good quality out of both of them. So the bench is probably Memphis – you know, a check for Memphis. But do you mm-hmm. think this is going to be a very close series?
Oh, I think this will be a very close series. And part of
it's
why
the least sexy of the series, if you ask me.
It's it may seem like that on paper, but then you get Damian Lillard in crunch time, and I can't imagine anyone not wanting to watch that.
But good Grizzlies are so good in the postseason too. Now, I know they kind of had a meltdown against the Thunder when they got that 3-2 series lead.
This should be one of the best crowds, like the crowds in Portland and
Moda Center for Portland and
are going to be so into it that I really think viewing this the game should seem even bigger,
even better than Drake at Toronto,
even better than Drake in Toronto.
he's a great super fan. I can't lie.
Has he given up? Has he jumped on Cleveland yet?
you know how they have that Homer Simpson picture where he's by the bushes and then he disappears?
Right, and just kind of slowly fades back. Yeah.
That's Drake. That is Drake. Every time I watch that, I'm like, that is definitely Drake. Super fan bandwagon man.
We the North fading to LeBron James.
It was Kentucky, too. He's like the Kentucky home guy. You know, and everybody was like, I wonder when he's going to be a Wisconsin fan. That was like the number one trend on Twitter when Wisconsin. It was Drake.
Was he on TV that much during the Wisconsin-Kentucky game? I don't even recall.
He wasn't. It was because of the fact that he's always cheering for Kentucky.
I see.
And they wanted to rub it in his face that he lost. It's kind of like Ashley Judd. Like, now everyone hates I think she's okay attractive. Like, I mean, she's a little old.
At what age
do you lose your like hotness?
No, at what age do announcers pretend like she's not the hot? At what age do announcers not act like she is the most attractive woman on the planet during Kentucky games?
Let me ask you a different question. At what point does a really hot celebrity pretending to be a bandwagon sports fan, regardless of the hotness, become extremely fucking annoying? Like, let me give you an example. Olivia Munn with Aaron Rodgers cheering on the Wisconsin Badgers. Olivia Munn probably don't even know where the fuck Wisconsin is. I mean, at what point is that like, you know what, Olivia Munn, you're hot, but please sit the fuck down.
I'd never.
God damn it, dude. You're just like them.
Who's them?
Them? Like all the suckers that fall for all these girls that love these teams because their boyfriends do.
I mean, you watch so many terrible – whatever. I'm not sure what Disney's going
to
break out.
Why don't you just fall in love with Diane Cannon with the Lakers if you want to?
I mean, I need something to watch at Lakers games.
You want to watch Diane Cannon? She's like in her 70s.
I don't even know who that is. It's not Swaggy P, so I'm all in.
Oh, you want Iggy Azalea instead?
I don't know who that is.
Are you serious? You don't know IGGY?
I've heard the name. I could not identify this person.
That is Nick Young's girlfriend, the Australian rapper.
Wait, She is an Australian rapper.
An Australian rapper girlfriend of Nick Young's.
All right, I have to Google this.
Norman Rockwell discovering pop culture right before your very eyes, ladies and gentlemen. But I think we were talking about this series between the Blazers and the Grizzlies somehow, and we got lost into the shuffle talking about celebrities. But, oh, yeah, because we were talking about Drake, who sucks. But no, these teams don't suck. It will be a bit of a heartbreaker if one of these teams does lose the series, because it is a 4-5. But it just feels like these teams should have gone farther, even though one of them is going to get bounced.
Well, I mean, either team is going to be the sacrificial lamb.
Like with the Mavericks, if they lose in the first round, I'd be kind of like, yeah, kind of thought so. With the Pelicans, yeah. You know, with the Blazers and the Grizzlies, it's kind of like, man, that sucks.
I mean, well, welcome to the Western Conference.
Mm-hmm.
If
they were in the East, how far would either of these teams go?
And they're at least challenging Atlanta and Cleveland to get into the West to the finals, to the Western Conference final, or in that version of the Eastern Conference finals.
The first round of the Western Conference was unreal.
This girl's name is Amethyst.
Now you're all hung up on this fucking Iggy Azalea.
Yeah, apparently so.
Be mad at you. You're looking up like hottie Australian rappers in the middle of the night.
I guess.
Headphones on.
Pretty much.
Oh, God. Hide the kids. If anybody needs to know, we are recording this late in the night, and it's starting to show. But yes, the first round of the Western Conference last year was awesome. Thunder, mm-hmm. Grizzlies went 7 games. I think 4 of them went to overtime, or 5 of them, I believe. The other one was the Spurs and the Mavericks, which we talked about, went 7 games. Clippers, Warriors went 7 games. The game 7 they had was unreal. Blazers, Rockets. Do you see something similar here? Do you think there's any way they can top that?
It probably won't be as good as last season, just because so many games went so deep. The one eight game series, I don't see going 6 games. Memphis Portland, I could see going 7. That'll be a really good series. Clippers Spurs will go a few games, and I think Houston closes out Dallas pretty quickly. So I think you have 2 really good series with the Clippers and Spurs and Portland and Memphis.
Okay, now we're gonna go a little further here. So we make our predictions, and I'll give you the head start by talking about you can line up your semifinal matchups and then just kind of go into the conference finals and who wins. Who do you have in the Western Conference as your kind of like overall prediction?
Golden State coming out of the West. Golden State over.
Like in the semis, who do they play?
I've got Golden State over Portland and San Antonio over Houston and Golden State over Houston. I mean, Golden State over San Antonio in the
So
Western
you think
Finals.
The Warriors will play the Spurs, even
yes.
though the Spurs were like a win away from being a 2-seed?
Correct.
Okay, but the Warriors win.
I have the Warriors winning in 6 games.
I've got the Warriors playing the Grizzlies and winning.
Okay.
I've got the Rockets playing the Clippers.
Oh, yeah, the Clippers beating...
I have the Clippers beating the Spurs.
Okay.
Because I hate myself. And I've got the Rockets beating the Clippers. I almost have chalk. The Rockets beat the Clippers. And then, you know what? I'm going to flip that. I'm going to do an unprecedented. I'm going to flip it. I say the Clippers beat the Rockets and the Warriors beat the Clippers in the conference finals.
That's a cool story, Glenn. I would love to see that. That would probably be 2 of the teams that hate each other the most.
You just called me Glenn.
Yes.
Is that sarcasm?
That was, I believe, the T-shirts that Draymond Green had printed.
Now you're name dropping Draymond Green.
Yes. Anyway.
You're talking about when Dante Jones rubbed off his shoulder when he was doing the post-game interview.
Yeah, and he
gave him the death stare.
Yes, and refused to call Doc Rivers Doc.
What level of death stare was that? Was that like, I'm going to shoot you in the alleyway stare, or I'm going to punch you while your girlfriend's not looking stare?
It wasn't the worst there of all time. It was more just generally confused in that I need to do something, but I can't because I'm on television type stare.
It wasn't like Michael Jordan, Xavier McDaniel head-to-head stare where he told him to go fuck himself. You don't remember that?
Hello?
Hello?
Ah! I apparently hit mute by mistake and then turned the volume up.
We suddenly reached technical difficulties as we reached the 1 hour 20 minute mark of this episode. So obviously we're gonna be wrapping up. But no, I was just talking about a very random one where Xavier it was Game 7 of the '92 playoffs. Since we're talking playoffs, with the Knicks and the Bulls, and Xavier was talking trash to Scottie Pippen, who was trying to get into his head. Michael went headbutt to headbutt with Xavier McDaniel, and you could clearly see him on the camera saying, fuck you, right in front of the referee, does not call a technical foul.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's Michael Jordan.
That's like the ultimate like animosity like on the court I've ever seen with one guy and another guy.
Yeah, I mean, there have been you have seen fights break out in the court. That's probably a little bit worse.
Yeah, but I'm talking about like visual, like facial expression. Like Booker T, don't tell me he just said that. Like that kind of thing.
Did he call for a spin-a-rooney afterwards?
Mark Madden did.
Oh, sure.
That fat fuck.
But he's still, at least he's dead.
Mark Madden is not dead.
Please let me live in my own world.
But that is your Western Conference playoff preview for now. We might re-explore this as we get to the later rounds, depending on how exciting everything is and what we can recap. Before we get out of here, give me your league MVP.
Russell Westbrook.
What is wrong with you? You know you live in New Orleans.
What?
You gotta root for Anthony Davis.
I mean,
My 4-year-old daughter cheers for Anthony Davis.
I do, but Russell Westbrook to me is the MVP.
Not even over Harden and Curry, though. Like, when you look at the overall body of work.
I just think the carry job he's done is just so incredible. Like, watching him play.
Just the statistically?
Not just visually watching one guy doing everything for his team.
I'm never going to make you see the way, do I?
No, you're not.
It's going to be Anthony Davis. He's going to rule the world. He's going to be the best player in the world. Probably for a different team, though.
I mean, I have been leading the Free Davis movement because I can't stand watching him play on the Monty Williams.
Well, we're going to see it for probably 2 more years because he just saved his job. You know, we got to do. You got to do your version of the Vince McMahon. You're fired. You know, like if Monty had lost.
Monty, you're fired.
That's pretty good. No, mine's a little more exaggerated. Like, you're
fired. Monty, listen here, Monty. Life sucks. Then you die.
It really.
Thank you very much.
It's been much funner if he lost now, that someone had fired him like right on the spot.
Like, I mean, I was hoping he'd get fired Lane Kiffin style, like in the parking lot, or Benson made him kiss his ass.
Is that how Lane Kiffin was fired at USC?
Yes. Yes. Pat Hayden forced him to kiss his ass.
Oh, okay. Pat Hayden forced him to kiss his ass. That's what I was
Yes.
Well, you know they have a Kiss My Arse match coming up between, I think, Sheamus and Dolph Ziggler.
Who are those people?
Okay, with that, we're done with this Western Conference Playoff Podcast. On behalf of Norman Rockwell, this is Andrew Reich. I know we went a little later, but I hope everybody enjoys the Western Conference playoffs. I will be back with Adam Murray as we discuss the Eastern Conference playoffs, so please check out that one as well as we get towards the playoffs.